Today's episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. To see how FreshBooks can save you time and boost your creativity, go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the how did you hear about this section. Hey friends, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm also the author of a bunch of books, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, which is about how to lead teams effectively, especially teams of creative people, problem solvers. And that's pretty much what we have to do every day, right? We are problem solvers as create on demand professionals. We go to work, we solve problems, we deliver value on time, on budget, in order to keep our job. And there's a tremendous amount of pressure that comes with that. So this show is about you. It's about your personal creative process, but also how you bring yourself to your organization. Many of us listening have responsibility to lead other people. We have to create an environment in which other people can do their best work. And that's really, I believe, the measure of a great leader. The measure of a great leader isn't the work that they do. It's the work that they unleash other people to do. So today we're going to talk with a couple of people I've followed with great admiration for a number of years, Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton. They've written a number of phenomenal books. They consult some of the biggest companies in the world, but their new book is called Leading with Gratitude, 8 Leadership Practices for Extraordinary Business Results. This is a fascinating conversation because they're going to talk about this overlooked concept, you know, leading with gratitude. We often don't think about the importance of gratitude when it comes to managing, when it comes to leading, because we're so busy in the details. We don't take time to step back and think about how we can bring a posture of gratitude to everything we do. So they're going to help us with that today. Before we jump in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So listen, whether you're a writer, you're a designer, maybe you make a creative living some other way, it's common to fall into a creative rut from time to time. We all do. I do. All of us do. And climbing out of that rut is different for each person. One thing's for sure, though, it takes time to get past the rut. The right business tools are an easy way to find that important time you need to focus on your craft. So if you've been listening to the Accidental Creative Podcast for any period of time, you know I'm a huge fan of FreshBooks. I use it. It's made my life so much more simple, and really, frankly, our process is so much more simple as an organization. It's easy to use accounting software specifically designed to save creatives like you a bunch of time every single day. Here's how. You can automate your invoicing, so all you have to do is wait for payments. Wouldn't that be nice? You can snap photos of your expense receipts to easily log and add them to invoices. You can accept credit card and ACH payments right there on your invoices to get paid up to 2 times faster. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. FreshBooks can actually save you up to 200 hours a year. And that rut that you were in, well, it's going to be a mountain of ideas before you know it. So right now, we're offering listeners a free 30-day trial of FreshBooks. No credit card required. All you have to do is go and sign up. You can use it free for 30 days. That's incredibly rare, by the way. Go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter the Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Again, that's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. We thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. All right, let's dive into the conversation with Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton. Again, they're the author of a new book called Leading with Gratitude. This conversation is going to sound a little different because I had to record them all at the same time, but I really, really enjoyed this conversation. I think you will too. Here they are. Well, it is with great joy that I welcome to the show Adrian Gostick and Chester Elton. I've been following their work for a number of years. They're everywhere. I mean, seriously, everywhere. Every event I go to, it seems like one of them was just there. Their books are everywhere. They've had such an influence on the marketplace. Their new book is called Leading with Gratitude, 8 Leadership Practices for Extraordinary Business Results. Adrian and Chester, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Well, thanks, Todd. This is Chester, and I'm always pleased to be with my good friend, Adrian Gostick. Adrian, wave to the crowd.
Hi, everybody, and thanks, Todd. We were just chatting that Todd and I worked together at Intel many years ago doing some marketing work, and so, yeah, happy to connect again.
Wonderful. Yeah. Okay. So the new book is Leading with Gratitude, and, right now, just right out of the gate, I know that there's probably somebody listening right now. They're driving, they're on their way to work. You know, they're in a difficult situation at work. Their team is being difficult, or there's one person at work that's just really rubbing them the wrong way. And I know they're thinking right now, okay, gratitude sounds great on the surface, but, you know, listen, I'm paying people to do a job. Why should I show gratitude? I mean, that's what they're getting paid for, right? So how would you respond to someone who has that sort of off-the-cuff response to this notion of gratitude?
You know, Chester here, I'll tell you, that's not uncommon, right? That people look at leading with gratitude as sort of a nice-to-have, not a must-have. Mm-hmm. And what we loved doing, and we had great fun, was knocking down these myths about why you shouldn't lead with gratitude. And that's one of them. You know, hey, it's called work for a reason, guys. You know, we're checking the boxes here.
Right.
We haven't got time for all that kind of fluffy stuff. And yet, when you look at, you know, those leading with gratitude, and some people call them soft skills, and you know, instead of hard skills, those, that ability to communicate, to really inspire, to engage, and so on, aren't nice to haves, they're must haves. And people that think, look, I'm going to be tough, I don't have time for these kinds of things, are missing the bigger picture, that when you find the time and you engage with your people and you understand that giving thanks and giving gratitude and recognition for the little things that happen every day is a key component to high performance. What would you add, Adrian?
Well, one of the things that we've done in writing Leading with Gratitude, and we've now, Chester and I, through research partners, we've now surveyed over 1 million employees over the last decade. That's a lot of people. So we got a lot of data that basically helps us understand what really are those drivers of getting people to care, getting our people to be engaged, giving their best ideas, their full effort. And one of the no-brainers is gratitude. It's not just, hey, thanks everybody, and throwing high fives around. It's actually seeing where value is being created and actually being able to spot, you know, here's the issues that we're having, here are the ways that our people are overcoming. And that is very powerful, to know that I'm valued as an employee. And it's also what we found in the data. It drives higher levels of performance, higher profitability, higher levels of customer satisfaction, all the things we're looking for.
Yeah, it's all, those are all the metrics that managers are looking for, right? Like, as you said, I mean, I was really surprised. I mean, you said 2x profitability, 20% higher customer satisfaction, which, I mean, you wouldn't equate customer satisfaction with exhibiting gratitude to your employees, right? But yet you found, you know, 20% higher customer satisfaction, higher engagement, you know, higher trust, all of these things that we all try to do. And yet, for some reason, I don't know why, but gratitude is not always at the top of our list. And I think it's because of these ingratitude myths that you talk about. So I want to dive into a couple of those before we unpack some of the practices that we can implement. One of the ingratitude myths is that fear is the best motivator. Can we dive into that one a little bit? Because I've heard that often, right? People only respond to me when I threaten them, right? Or when I sort of hold up a promotion over them or dangle something in front of them.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Todd. And yet, as we talk to managers, I don't think we've ever met one who really does believe that I lead with fear. There are times I put the pressure on, yes, and there's times where I maybe, you know, threaten jobs, or, you know, it's like, and as we start getting it, most of us have done this at more than one point in our careers. And if a leader, you don't read that chapter and feel a little guilty, then you're truly unique. And what we've said is these myths that we set out are the psychology that we identify. And there's a lot of ways that managers can lead with fear without even knowing it. They may be insecure themselves. They're afraid to, you know, they have the imposter syndrome. They're afraid to give credit to others because it'll lessen them. We interviewed a lot of really successful CEOs in writing Leading with Gratitude. One was Ken Chenault, who just recently retired from being the head spot at American Express. And he told us, you know, a lot of leaders get this mixed up. He says they think they're being tough by withholding their gratitude. He says that's absolutely wrong. He says you can be grateful a lot, and people are going to jump higher for you if you reward and recognize them and now and then have to correct behavior, than the other way around, where you beat up and beat up and beat up and now and then say thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it when people say, look, I'm not leading by fear. I'm just being genuine and authentic and transparent. You know, I'm just giving them the cold hard facts. And I love the thing, I'm being authentic. Say, yeah, you're being authentically a real jerk. And you should work on that.
Well, and there's a difference between authenticity and transparency too, right? Like, you can be authentic and not show everybody all of your worst fears and all of your worst concerns and lead from that place. And the best gratitude is authentic. But one of the other myths that you call out is that people will think that you're bogus, right? That people are not going to believe you. How do we begin to counter that myth of ingratitude?
You know, I think it's like anything. We talk about, you know, do it now, do it often, you know, don't be afraid. It's this idea, I'm going to be bogus and I'm not going to be very good at it. And I think, well, yeah, when was the last time you tried something new and you were really good at it right away? You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to try bobsledding. You know what? First time down, you know, broke a world record. This idea about, you know, just start to do it. And if you've got a misconception, I think, of leaders when it comes to gratitude, that it's got to, you know, you got to be all weepy and you've got to be all emotional. It's got to be, you know, the Academy Awards kind of thing. It doesn't. You can be very authentic and very open and honest and be very specific. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, listen, Todd, I saw what you did with that customer. They were really upset when they came in. And you went through the whole process. You know, you walked them through with the warranties or whatever the industry is that you're in. And you can be very authentic and less bogus. And I think when leaders really gravitate to that, they've got a misconception as to what it looks like. That yes. It has to be super emotional and weepy. And absolutely, it can be very businesslike. It can be very clear and very specific. And I think that's helpful.
Wonderful. All right, I want to get tactical. This book is so full of practical advice about how to implement your research into the daily life of your team, and also, you know, there are tremendous personal benefits as well to operating from a place of gratitude. But I want to talk about a couple of those practices that you call out. One of them that really struck me in a profound way is assume positive intent. I think I know what you mean by that, but you know, how does that play out for a manager? What does it mean to assume positive intent?
You know, I think many of us, we think we are doing our teams this great service by spotting all the problems. They bring us their project, and we tell them all the things we've noticed that are problems with it. We are constantly on the lookout for issues. That's what we're paid for, right? And we end up becoming, as one manager was described to us by his people, as the seagull. You know, he comes in, craps on everything, and leaves. And it's quite shocking, you know, to managers. They go, what do you mean I scare my people? You know, it's this one word. What do you mean? And we say, look, no. You're assuming negative intent everywhere you go. Somebody brings you a problem, so you want to know, well, who caused that? What bonehead did this, that, or the other? Instead of assuming positive intent. Look, I know, I'm sure you meant to do well. I'm sure that everything, you know, we all try. We don't come in, you know, clock in looking to bring the company down every day. You assume positive intent with people, and they're much more likely to bring you issues that you can then resolve. One of the things we talk about in the book is how you do this, right, Jess? And the first step is you pick up the phone.
Right. Get the data, you know, get the information. When you assume negative intent, what you're doing is you're demonizing the employee and you're victimizing yourself, right? How could you do this to me? You're a manager. Mm-hmm. You've embarrassed me. So pick up the phone, get the information, get all the facts. And, you know, don't use that passive aggressive kind of leadership. You know, one of the people that did this really well, and we had the opportunity to interview, was Hubert Joly, who took Best Buy from $1 billion deficit to $1 billion in profit. And they said, talk to us about this assuming positive intent. He says, you know, I may be naive. I just assume that people come to work wanting to do a good job. And in trying to do a good job, they make a mistake. And you know what? That's fine. We can correct the mistake and move on. Leading with positive intent just creates so much better place to work and live. You know, he said it gives better purpose to your work. It drives deeper relationships. And that healthy employee culture translates to a healthy relationship with your customers. We've got a wonderful catchphrase we love, that the customer experience will never exceed the employee experience. And assuming positive intent goes a long way to, you know, creating that positive employee experience. Would you agree? Yeah.
I would definitely agree with you. And I would even add to that, listen, if right now a lot of people are listening to this and they're thinking, yeah, I wish my manager would do that. I wish my manager would assume positive intent of me. And I would spin it on them and say, well, are you doing that for your manager as well? Because I think often we don't give our manager the benefit of the doubt. You know, we don't consider that there are all kinds of forces that they're dealing with that we're not even privy to, that we have no idea are affecting them. And so we invent these negative stories about how they're, you know, they're out to get us. And the reality is they're just trying to deal with constraints that we're completely unaware of.
Absolutely agree. Yeah, and you're exactly right. It's amazing when you do take this tech and you assume positive intent, how all of a sudden you just see the world in a very different way. I mean, this happens to us every single day. What do you mean that other department has taken our resource? You know, why don't you talk to the person? Pick up the phone, talk to the person. It's amazing how those things kind of fall apart. And those assumptions that we make, 95% of the time, they're different. They're just not what we thought.
Yeah.
You know, I love this too. And we talk a lot about at the end of the book, you know, take it home. You know, do that at home as well. Assume positive intent about your kids and stuff. You know, sometimes we forget they're just little kids, right? They're going to make mistakes. It's not that they're trying to make your life miserable by spilling the milk or breaking all the eggs or letting the dog out, you know, without a leash. They're just being kids. And so what I love about what Adrian and I were able to do, particularly at the end of the book, was don't leave your best self at work or your best self at home. Be your best self. And this whole idea of assuming positive intent, I think, just goes a long way to building trust, to being more open and honest about things, and to stay away from that, you know, demonizing people at work and victimizing yourself. Just look, we're all in this together. Let's figure it out and move forward. I'm so glad you picked up on that. That's one of our favorite parts of the book, for at home and at work.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites as well. And another one that really struck me was you advise people to look for small wins. How do we do that, and how does that affect the dynamic on our team?
Yeah, well, you know, when I, back in college, you know, I had to take a sports class or phys ed class. So I took bowling. I thought, oh, that'd be kind of fun. Now, we're all throwing the balls down there the first time. And the professor, if you can call him that, says, hey, guys, come on over here. He says, quit aiming for the pins at the other end. You aim for the arrows. They're about 10 feet away. He says, aim for the arrows, you'll hit the pins. Hmm. And the point is, we have this tendency to look for the big goals. I'm only going to recognize my people when we hit that big sales goal end of the year. And, you know, if you're not recognizing the milestones along the way, you're not going to get there. You know, we all need milestones in our lives to let us know, oh, okay, I made it the first step. I made it the next step. You know, one of the most powerful ways that we engage our people at work is recognizing them in those little things they do every day. You know, I got the bug out of the computer system. I hit my quota for calls today. I did those little things that really will make me feel like I've accomplished something. When my manager notices and values what I do, that's when great things happen.
And it builds momentum. You know, we talk about that a lot in business. You know, where's the momentum? Even in sports, you know, who's got the momentum? Well, the way you build up the momentum is those little victories along the way. I know sports analogies are way overused. I love the one that says, well, you would never do that for your kid, you know, at their soccer game. You wouldn't say, well, I'm going to save all the cheers to for the final score. I'm not going to give them. That's, you know, if we win, sure, we'll go for pizza. You know, you cheer all along the way. And if your kids are real little, you cheer, you know, minute things. You know, I remember calling my son Garrett in our town, lacrosse is huge, or as we say in Jersey, huge. I remember calling him and he was just starting to play. I said, hey, buddy, how was the game? He says, oh, we won. I go, ah, that's great. I said, did you score a goal? He goes, well, no. I said, oh, well, did you assist on a goal? He goes, no. I said, well, did you touch the ball? He goes, three times. I go, that's my boy, you know. So those, you know, create the momentum and celebrate the little wins along the way. It makes it a lot easier to get to the big goal. And I think we sometimes get that in our personal lives and we forget to apply it to the workplace.
That's so good. That is so good. All right, I want to talk about one more practice that you discuss in the book that really struck me as well, because I think we often think about leadership as, you know, me to the person on my team, right? And the interactions that I have with them. But, you know, leadership is also about developing a culture that is between the people on the team and the defining the norms and expectations of how those people interact with one another. And one of the things you talk about is the importance of making it peer to peer. What does this look like for us as leaders?
You know, one of the things we found is that sometimes a manager will read this and they go, oh my gosh, more things for me to do. One of the best things we found as we interviewed all these leaders was, in many cases, they're turning a lot of this over to their teams. They're asking people, and they're giving them actually budgets in some cases and tools, to recognize each other so that they can be grateful to each other. But they're teaching them how to do this, you know, so it's not just, hey, thanks for sharing your lunch with me. You say, okay, that's not exactly what we're looking for. Chester and I had this happen not too long ago. We came back. I was coming back from a trip early. Chester's in New Jersey. I'm in Utah, where our company, little company's headquartered. I come back early from a trip and come in there, and our little team's in a horseshoe, and one of our trainers, Chris, is recognizing one of our support people because she saved his bacon. He was out in the field. He had no training materials. They hadn't arrived. So she found the last FedEx office that was out near the airport that would take a shipment at 7 p.m. at night. She got out there just in time, and the next morning he had his materials. Well, he was recognizing her for that great, you know, achievement. And I called Chester up later and I said, you know, we weren't there. We're the owners of the company. We weren't there. We weren't invited. We weren't even told about it. But the team were recognizing each other for what they valued, which was dependability and I'm going to have your back. You know, that's kind of when you know that, you know, we're not perfect at being leaders. We talk a lot about it, but we're maybe not as good as we can be. But our team really picked up on this idea and we're living it.
Mm. And that's when I think you really get a great culture. You know, often as managers, we think, look, it's all got to be me, you know, and the recognition and praise is all top down. Well, when it starts going side to side, that's when it gets really good. And, you know, you've got buy-in. And as you think about it, you're building that next generation of leaders that are going to lead the way you lead. You know, it's never lost on me that the way a leader leads gives everybody else permission to lead the same way. Mm-hmm. If you withhold gratitude, if you're, you know, instilling fear in people, odds are that's how your people are going to react because that's what they're given permission to do. Whereas if it's just the opposite, the positive comes out as well. I think as leaders, sometimes we forget that people are watching this all the time and they will take our cues from us. Absolutely.
That is so good. And that doesn't just end in the workplace. You had earlier alluded to, Chester, the final chapter of the book, which is about taking it home. You know, as you say in the book, so many people give their best self to work and then they get home and they have nothing left. So what are some ways that we can begin to think about bringing gratitude into our home life or our sort of private world, our personal life as well?
You know, one best practice that we love is our friend Dave Kirpin. And Dave was really a convert to leading with gratitude. He would say, you know, I was just all about business. You know, typical New York guy, he's got a marketing company. And he said, I kept hearing this stuff about gratitude. And maybe I ought to take a look, you know. And it started to work. And he said, well, how can I bring this home? So they've got two kids. And he says, look, we try to eat dinner together as often as we can, you know, with schedules and stuff. It doesn't always happen. When we do, he said, you know, we'd have the typical conversation. We'd say, so how's your day? Fine. What'd you learn at school? Nothing. You know, and that was it. He said, so we changed it up and said, look, you've got to answer three questions at the dinner table. First one is, what was the best part of your day? Second is, who are you grateful for that's not at the table? And thirdly, who are you grateful for at the table that hasn't been thanked yet? And he said, you know what? It just changed the whole dynamic of eating together and being as a family. He says, I knew, you know, the kids at first weren't buying in, and then they got into it. He says, I knew they'd really bought in when they brought friends to dinner. And they said, okay, look, at dinner, you got to answer three questions. Okay, so be prepared. You know, have good answers. It just spins that positivity that is so wonderful that you sometimes do at work. You know, you start a meeting and say, what are two or three things you're doing real well? Well, do it at home. It works really well. Well, that's one of your favorites, Adrian. You know, we had a whole bunch in there.
Yeah, there's you know, one of those, and we've kind of touched on this before, is just giving your kids a break. You know, they're going to do stupid things. They're going to beg for a hamster and then never take care of it. They're going to never shower, or they'll shower too much. They'll take your money. Yeah. They'll, you know, there's lots of things they'll do. I mean, the thing is, you did this as a kid yourself, and we tend to forget. And so one of the things that we talk about is being grateful to them, you know, every day, greeting them with a, you know, a huge smile. I mean, they'll probably think you're a nut job, but it's okay. You know, you just be grateful for who they are. And it's amazing how your relationship will begin to change.
And simple little things. You know, when I get up in the morning, if I'm having a tough time, you know, getting going, we have four kids, and I'll just sit there and I'll text all four of them. Hey, your dad's thinking about you. Hope you're having a great day. Never forget, I'm cheering for you. Love you, Dad. And they always respond. And, you know, what we love about the whole idea of leading with gratitude is we think, oh, well, it's all for the team. You know, it's all to develop a great team and to get better results. Well, you know what? What your parents taught you when you were 5 years old still holds true. it's always better to give than to receive. Because when you give, you always receive. And that's the feedback we got from leaders that was really, really gratifying. As they said, you know, when I'm having a bad day, I go out and I appreciate some of my people. I text them. I'll write a note to their families. I'll call them out in a meeting. And yeah, it makes them feel good. You know what? It makes me feel great too. So I love that virtuous circle. And, you know, the world just needs more of that. We need to be building each other up more. That's a simple way to do it.
Absolutely. We've been talking with Adrian Gosick and Chester Elton, the authors of the new book, Leading with Gratitude. Adrian and Chester, if people want to come find you online, where can they come look for you?
We have leadingwithgratitudebook.com. We have lots of free resources out there. And if anybody buys a book, they get a bunch of free stuff. So it's kind of fun. And we can always check us out on adriangosick.com or chesterelton.com as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, wait. Look for us on Amazon. Yeah, look for us on Amazon and follow us on LinkedIn. We're always posting fun videos and stuff there as well. So lots of places to find us.
Wonderful. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking it. Thanks for this book, first of all, and thanks for the research behind it. Thanks for everything you've done with this book. And thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom with us today.
Thanks, Todd. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure. Call again.
I really enjoyed that, and I hope you did too. As always, if you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.